Wrestling Web and Pacific Beer Chat. We have
Banny, Brews Babes Banny here.
I'm Kevin Ems. I'm the brewmaster at Granville Island Brewing.
And I'm Mike Sharp. I'm beer educator at Granville Island Brewing.
Awesome. So we were just talking about how, if you've been listening to the show for a little while, and surprise, surprise, we did our numbers and people actually listened to the show, which was cool. Because I didn't know it for a long time. But we've convinced hundreds of people this is worth their time. In any case, Kevin, you made the intro song.
I did, yeah. Mike, the other founder of Pacific Beer Chat, shares a lot of musical taste with me, and he found out that I had made a solo album and checked it out, and he decided that the title track off that record fit for the opening of the podcast, so I was happy to hand that over, and I'm tickled every time I hear it at the beginning of the show. So,
and if people really like that intro song, where can they find it?
At conundrummusic at .bandcamp.com.
There you go.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's a plug-in.
It's basically the whole thing's a plug-in.
That's true.
That's super rad. So we're here today because we're going to take a look at some of Granville Island's, their new core, basically. Am I getting that right?
Yeah,
new core lineup. So we were just saying, I mean, Granville Island's been here since early 80s.
Yeah, that's right, 1984.
84, and after Horseshoe Bay, you guys were like the next stop.
Yes, sir.
So number two brewery in BC?
Yeah, the first microbrewery in Canada to produce and distribute.
There you go.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. So a lot of history here. Obviously, things have changed, gotten bigger over the years. You guys expanded a huge degree. You're part of a larger brewery community or brewery business with Creemore Springs and the Molson family.
Yeah,
Six Pints Specialty Beer Company.
Right.
Yeah.
But the cool thing here is that the local brewer, Kevin, you're still brewing the core lineup.
Absolutely. These all came from my brain, and you're going to taste what my brain tastes like in a minute.
Yeah. And the thing I noticed, too, while doing a bit of Instagram creeping is your beer brain is pretty big.
Yeah, I studied brewing at Harriet Watt University in Scotland with a few other great brewers that are in BC, notably Clay Potter from Moon Brewing in Victoria, and a lot of other great brewers across Canada. But we had an excellent class of people, and there was a lot of interest in all sorts of different styles and schools of brewing. So we brewed a little bit of everything and tried everything. When I started brewing professionally, I felt like I had a British kind of brewing style about my brewing, but I think I quickly proved myself wrong. I started making German styles immediately, and to date, I sometimes kind of chuckle when I look back at the brewing awards that I have managed to win. They're all over the map. There's absolutely no consistency to them. There's one for English IPA, and then there's a Doppelbock, there's a Belgian Wit, there's a Saison, and a Goza. So, yeah, it's a little wild.
Yeah, that is wild, all over the place. But, I mean, for those who don't know, the European level of brewing education is like very much different than over here. There's Siebel in Chicago, and there's not many programs that are the equivalent to what you've done.
Before we turned on the microphone here, we were chit-chatting a little bit about how the industry is really growing and proliferating like crazy. So I became a professional brewer in 2011, and when I joined my first brewery, Cole Harbour Brewing Company, I believe we were like the 27th brewery operating in British Columbia, and now the grand total is up to
170 something is the last I heard.
170, depending on how you
depending
count
on
it.
When you're listening, you might have to check.
Oh, yeah?
Check,
five roads opened yesterday in Langley. So, 171 or something.
Which is crazy. Like, I still feel like I've only been doing this for a short time, but it's been a crazy explosion of the industry since then. To follow that, there have been more brewing schools starting up, brewing education programs, notably Kwantlen in BC. I know they do a really good job. We have one of our former employees here, Daryl McDonald, that has gone there, and Daryl is going to do some really cool things. And I've spoken with people at that program. I really like their approach to it. And there's Niagara College in Ontario and also Olds in Alberta. So they've been popping up since then.
Super rad.
Yeah,
it's cool that, you know, this has grown into a viable industry. What used to be sort of a cottage industry is very much, you know, drives a lot of the tourism in and around town, and is ever more an important part of BC.
Mm-hmm. Gotta knock those wine guys off sometimes.
Yeah. How do those jerks figure everything out, right? They got the government in their back pocket, no problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like wine. and then you're also, is it Master Cicero?
Pending.
Pending.
No, I'm an advanced Cicerone.
Advanced Cicerone. Yeah. So your ability to pick out flavors, find a style, you got that down pat.
That's at least what the piece of paper says.
They're all just pieces of paper. Yeah. They're all just expensive pieces of paper. All right, that's super rad. So all I'm trying to say here is, you know, we got someone who clearly knows their beer in front of us.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, or in front of your ears, I suppose, from the listener point of view. So, again, it's to me, it's super cool. A lot of times you hear about an acquisition or a brewery that's owned by a bigger brewery, you know, sort of losing control of the reins, and that doesn't seem to be what's happened in this case.
Yeah, I have heard that a lot as well, obviously, from where I'm sitting and the role that I have. Everyone that I speak to, particularly from the industry or people that have an interest in the industry, have this conception that there must be a marketing department or someone from head office in Toronto telling me what they want me to make, and that it's very prescriptive. My experience has been entirely the opposite. I pretty much make what I want, and then people figure out how to market it later. And I've done some weird stuff here too. Like I made a beer called the Baconator, which is a smoked Doppelbock, because Doppelbocks usually have Ader in the name, and German smoke malt tastes like bacon, so bad joke turns into a beer, and all of a sudden it's on tap. So that, just as an example, I've really been able to take whatever ideas I have for anything wacky or something that might have legs and go ahead and brew it and put it on in the tap room, and we get immediate feedback. Compared to some other places that I have worked, you know, when you're in a growing business and you're fairly new and you're trying to get a foothold, you need to find what the real brand that drives your business is going to be, and then kind of hunker down and brew that a lot to keep the business growing and keep everybody paid. But fortunately, because we are an established brewery here, and the small batch brewery is in part a test kitchen, I just kind of experiment and make new beers all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when you travel around these breweries, a lot of people have the idea now, especially in Vancouver, that, you know, it's a license to print money. And as you say, that's not the case for so many brewers. You get to know the owners and the brewers who are often the owners, and it's a lot of times hand to mouth.
I think these days we should open a brewery was the 90s, you know, we should open a bar.
Yeah.
And just everyone wants to do it. It seems like so much fun on paper, but it's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And it's not not the easiest gig to keep going.
No, absolutely not. So we got a couple beers in front of us.
Yeah.
I taste what I think is the IPA.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if we want to start there.
I haven't even started.
Sorry, I got excited. That's,
if that's where we're starting, we'll start with the biggest, boldest beer of the bunch and work our way back.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, that is the IPA you found there.
We could probably go back to there's a lager.
We can start at the Pilsner.
Pilsner.
Which I think you've got there and there.
So, yeah, we're noticing right off the bat that with this new core lineup of beers, all of the beers are tending to the lighter side, particularly when you see them in this in these smaller sample glasses. That really just comes from a preference that, you know, I've developed and in-house we've developed for letting some of the ingredients, particularly the hops and then the quality of the fermentation, shine through, and we're moving a little bit away from really heavy malt bills like we used to have in the past. There's absolutely a place and time for that, but with these three of the new core, we went a little bit more on the pale side and less complicated on the malt side.
Do you use do you have a company or do you have a base malt that you guys like to use all throughout?
We actually have a really great relationship with Canada Malting.
Okay, cool.
And we use their two-row malt as our base.
So it's Canadian two-row in the beers?
100%.
Badass.
Yeah.
And so the lager we got here is, sorry, Pilsner.
Yeah.
You were talking about German beers earlier, the German-style Pilsner, was that?
Yeah. Yeah, so when you're looking at your core lineup, it's really helpful. You do need a lager in there. You need to have a kick-ass craft style lager. Mm-hmm. My favorite of the craft styles, if you know, I had a gun to my head, would be the German style Pilsner. I have an affinity with it that goes back a long, long time. It was fortunately for me the first full beer I ever got to drink when I was coming of age.
When you were stealing them, I feel like your mom's doing.
My dad always bought good beers, actually, and he liked to kind of make a show of how much he was enjoying drinking them. And one day he bought a six pack of Bitburger Pilsners, and he was enjoying that. And then one of them made their way over to me. So this German style Pilsner is a little bit of an homage to that. I've always loved this style of beer since then.
Mm. Yeah. Right. And as you say, I mean, you have to have your lineup. It seems, you know, we seem to be going two extremes in craft beer. Mm-hmm. You're having your big beers, your pastry style, your huge hazies. That change, you know, week to week, mm-hmm. and then everybody's also turning back. And I think that's par for the course of craft beer, right? Do something extreme and then try and do the opposite, right?
Yeah.
Total punk rock reaction. So we're back to Pilsners, which is great.
Well, the way I view it is that Pilsners were the first modern lager, and they inspired all of those, you know, pale golden lagers that became the most popular beer style mm-hmm. in the world.
Yeah.
Then craft beer emerged as a revolt against that because things got too boring and there was only one style. As great of a style as it is, mm-hmm. people wanted more variety, so people started brewing big, heavy IPAs, big pale ales, and now we've gotten to a point where a lot of that's been explored, mm-hmm. and so I think that's why I went with a Pilsner instead of another North American generic lager, is we wanted something characterful, but still super crushable.
Yeah, another aspect is when you do approach the Pilsner space, I see a lot of brewers that naturally gravitate towards Czech Pilsner.
Yeah.
And for me, it's not only the history of it being the original Pilsner that attracts them, but it's the attraction of the saaz hop and how you can really go buck wild with it. And essentially, you're making like a saaz IPA of a lager. And
with the Czech.
Yeah, with the Czech style Pilsner. And there's also some other fun ingredients that have been made available to brewers, like under-modified Pilsner malt or floor-malted Pilsner malts and things like that really get a lot of craft brewers excited. But for me, when it comes to making a Pilsner, I like that highly German-engineered approach to Pilsner, where it's clean and snappy, tetnanger. So.
Yeah, there's a lot of skill, too. I mean, people who I think are getting into craft beer don't realize there's no mistakes. You can't make a mistake when you're making a Pilsner.
Nowhere to hide.
Yeah, I mean, if you're making a big hoppy beer or a big pastry stout, you know, that you can hide behind your adjuncts and your hop additions. But with something like this, you clearly have to have your game on.
There's no lactose in here.
There's no. I try it. I try lactose. I'd be into that. That's awesome. So, this is your Pilsner. What are you hoping that we get out of it?
To me, what this Pilsner is about is getting people from both sides. If you are new to craft beer, into the craft beer space, the German-style Pilsner is so lagery that it's not going to offend you. It's going to feel familiar, but it's going to feel like a well-done, refreshing version of that. If you are already a fully bought-in craft beer enthusiast, then you are going to know a bit about the style, and you're going to respect the execution, how it's got the crisp and dry finish. It's got the herbal tetnanger notes, and it's refreshing. It's pale and brilliantly clear. It's ticking all the boxes and super crushable.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. This is from a master Cicero.
Advanced.
Sorry.
Nice. Yeah, well, I'm really enjoying it. I agree. My first taste of this one, I've noticed that as much as I love craft beer, it's the one thing I say in beer that craft beer doesn't do that well is a Pilsner or a Czech Pilsner or any sort of lager, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know, it's a skill, and to be able to reproduce it over and over is a really difficult thing. So it's a place where I think those mid-sized craft breweries to large craft breweries like yourself, that's really a space where you guys can, you know, take the lead again, so to speak. And I think this is a good example of that.
Thank you very much. I feel like this has a little bit of my professional history in it as well. Like, I came out of, you know where I'm going with this. I came out of brewing school and got my first brewery job. And then when we were ready to fire the kettles up, the first brew I did, the first commercial recipe, was 311 Lager at Cole Harbor Brewing Company. And then all of a sudden, I'm brewing German Helles Lager every week for a few years. So Right out of the bat, I got used to making this style and not looking to make a clean beer with no mistakes visible. So I carried a love of brewing pale German lagers, particularly from that experience. And this is sort of an evolved version of that story. I actually started working on this recipe in the first year I came to Granville Island Brewing. Things get a little bit quieter after you do the big push at wintertime. And then over the Christmas kind of break, I have some empty tanks and I've got time to ferment things a little bit more. So I just started sticking North German Pilsners in the tanks. Yeah. And the recipe from then to now has only been tweaked.
So cool.
Yeah.
It's awesome. You mind if we move on to the next
Absolutely.
One?
Absolutely.
I'm going to have to dig in here to cleanse my palate.
He selected the Genoa salami.
Is that the right one to cleanse? What am I doing wrong?
Yeah, this is just our regular charcuterie board. A lot of the meats we get are from just over in the market, because we've got the great market right there. Oh, so, awesome. Oyama Sausage is one of our great partners. Yeah.
You guys are in the best location.
I know, really? It's not bad.
No. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's, the other great things is, yeah, you can come here and just enjoy a day out.
Yeah.
Where so many other places, you know, you're there for that brewery, which is a great thing. But, you know, there's not so many other places to eat in a business park.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we do have a full kitchen, which is definitely one of the nice things.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. So next one.
So if we've moved our pilsners aside, the one that's remaining in the middle is going to be the Northwest Pale Ale.
So to speak to the Northwest Pale Ale, Granville Island has been famous for a long time for English Bay Pale Ale.
Yes.
And, yeah.
That was the first keg I ever bought.
Oh, really? Yeah. That was the first beer I ever drank.
Yeah. We've been brewing it since 1987. It started out as Lord Granville Pale Ale. I actually think there's probably a bottle of it on the shelf here behind
you. Lord Granville.
Yeah. But since then, it's the name changed, but it's sort of been this nice, malty, English style. Sometimes when we entered in beer competitions, we discussed whether it should go in the brown ale category or the mild category, because it doesn't fit with the modern conception of pale ale. It's certainly not an American pale ale. It's a fantastic beer, but we did not have an American pale ale, so that's where we sort of started looking at what became the Northwest Pale Ale.
Absolutely, yeah. Things have moved on since 1987. I would say that back in those days, in the 80s, in BC microbrewing, a lot of the influence was taken from either Germany or Britain. There was not really a American brewing scene that people were looking to the way that they do today. It was starting to happen down there, but it wasn't a major influence. So when we were creating, the brewers created Lord Granville Pale Ale, which is now English Bay, at the time they were really looking to kind of an English pub ale as their model. We get a lot of feedback from people coming into our tap room here. We get a ton of people from all over the world because we're on Granville Island. That our pale ale is not what they expected to get from a pale ale. And they expected more of a hop-forward kind of Sierra Nevada type experience. Mm-hmm. And we felt like that was missing from our lineup because they're great styles, right? It's the ultimate craft beer session ale. They kind of tick all the boxes. They give you that nice bit of malt background, but then the wonderful hop flavor. They go great with a bunch of foods, and they're fun to drink all night long.
Yeah.
So we needed to make one. The problem is there's so many different directions you can go with an American pale ale. So what would be the right one? What we decided to do was brew five different variants and put them on tap at the same time in the tap room. And
Death match.
Yeah.
Yep.
We called it the Festival of Pale Ales.
I love it.
It was nice, too, because they were all pretty good.
Yeah.
But one clearly emerged as the winner from our customer feedback and internally as well. And that was the one that was pretty much an homage to the classic American Pale Ales of the Pacific Northwest, like Sierra Nevada Pale Ale and Deschutes Mirepoix.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Perfect.
So what are we using for hops here?
Centennial and Cascade.
Oh, so Big C hops.
Mm-hmm.
That the classic Northwest.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that because it's, I don't know, I don't drink a lot of Northwest pale ales.
Yeah.
These days, right. I gotta be honest. Like, I'm a slave to those sticker cans, 16 ounce cans. That's my life right now. But Sierra Nevada is one of those beers I sought out like 7 or 8 years ago. I remember the first time I had it was actually in London.
Yeah.
I couldn't get it up here, but they had it in London. Our beer laws suck. But it sort of it takes me back, but in a really nice sort of, as you say, soft but crushable way. Like I can see myself drinking quite a bit of this. It's nice to be reminded of the style. And it's funny, every once in a while I get this like pang for like a Northwest pale ale.
It's a look classic.
No, look yeah. no further.
Yeah.
You found it.
Yeah, that's great. So, my other question is because I was hearing you talk about, you know, basically the history of craft beer, you know, given that the history of Granville Island is sort of part and parcel of that. And this beer I'm enjoying right now, but I'm also concerned, is my English style pale ale going?
It is, no. It is sticking around.
It's sticking around.
Yeah, that's, when we were looking at what stays, what goes, it's definitely one that sticks around. It has been a favorite of a lot of people for so many years. And so while we did want, you know, sort of a true American pale ale, we weren't looking to get rid of that just because people love it. So we're leaving that as is. So
that's
English,
part of-
the only problem is now when you go somewhere and you're looking for a Granville Island pale ale, you just got to make sure you know which one you're looking for.
Right, so
we've got two of them out there now.
So I guess maybe this is a good time to ask. I know generally you name beers after landmarks or important things in the region. We had the Pilsner a moment ago. That one was...
German style
Pilsner.
Pilsner and...
Northwest Pale Ale.
So if I'm looking for my Northwest Pale Ale, I'm going Granville and Northwest Pale Ale. Or
yes,
I'm looking for my English style Pale Ale, it's English Bay Pale Ale.
Yes.
Right.
So we did the regional Vancouver naming thing for quite a while. And that made sense when we were one of five Vancouver brewers. And now that we're one of, I don't even know what the Vancouver number is.
I know that I pass 27 from my house in East Vancouver to get to work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think 60 is my last number I heard.
Yeah. So we sort of with the new branding, to describe the branding visually over
please.
The podcast, we've gone with what we like to refer to as a, what are we going with?
Vibrant industrial.
Vibrant industrial aesthetic. Whoa. If you've been down to Granville Island, it was originally Industrial Island, and it was all industrial shops. We've got the cement factory right around the corner. We're under a bridge. But through the 70s and into the 80s, the area was really revitalized. We've now got a ton of theaters. We've got a ton of artisans and craft shops. So there's this really interesting vibe on the island of industrial mixed with this vibrant artistic character. So the new cans, we've got the corrugated metal look that you'll see all over Granville Island mixed with some bright, vibrant colors. So we decided to sort of go with our space in Vancouver, which is Granville Island, instead of different Vancouver landmarks
because
we thought that made sense for us.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, as you say, the growth of brewing is basically exponential. Like, everybody says exponential. Like, this is a really good word to describe things.
Mm-hmm. But if you do the math...
It's literally exponential. This is the one time we are very... We nailed the grammar semantics on this one.
There's another element to it as well. As people get into craft beer, I think it's fair for us to say it's a pretty daunting space now.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of different styles with sub-styles on sub-styles. So it can be difficult to know what you're going to get, particularly when beers have really wacky names and you don't know what the liquid inside the can or bottle is going to be. A lot of people have heard of Granville Island Brewing because we've been around for so long, and now we sell our beers nationally as well. So we want to help consumers coming to us to know exactly what they're going to get when they buy the core beers. We're just trying to make it nice and easy so they get the experience that we're promising them.
So that was actually one of the questions I came here to ask is, you have a reach that a lot of other craft breweries based in Vancouver don't have. And you answered me just a moment ago, but I suppose you can expect to see these beers across Canada.
Yes. Let's do it.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. They will be available.
That's like a yes on a piece of paper, right?
It's going to be different in every market as to what's available, and I think you'll only see some of these brands in some places, but you will be able to find them.
It's all
Canada.
Through Western Canada for sure. In Ontario, they're focusing a little bit more. Provincially on their own breweries, but we do have a mix pack there, I believe, the Brewer's Choice.
Yeah.
So you can get all the new beers in there. And then we're pushing a little further east of that as well, but Western Canada for sure.
Yeah. Awesome. So I can't speak for anyone else but myself, but I finished the first two beers in front of me.
Oh my man.
Yeah, well, that brings us.
That's all right.
I was learning.
I guess it's one of those keep up or get left behind podcasts.
It's anything I want it to be at this point.
For anyone counting along at home, we are on beer three. If you could catch up, that would be delightful.
That's right.
They're little beers. They're not full ones. It's okay.
So that brings us on to the IPA. We've obviously had an IPA for years, and Kev's evolved us a beautiful new IPA. So.
That's right, yeah. So Granville Island, I believe, was the first one to distribute a packaged IPA.
In Canada?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, so that was originally Brockton IPA, and that later became infamous. So what we've really done with this IPA is evolved it kind of behind the scenes for a long time. But when we came to doing this brand refresh, we had the moment in time to look at it and decide to take it exactly where we wanted to take it to fit with the spirit of this rebrand. So, have you guys heard of IPAs? Do you know about IPAs?
Explain further.
Yeah, okay. Tell me more about what an IPA is.
I thought it was IPA.
Yeah, the IPA.
So they are the largest style in craft beer by a pretty large margin.
It's the one style that keeps growing year over year.
Mm-hmm. The one style to rule them all.
Yeah.
So if you're going to be a craft style brewing company, you need to have a kick-ass IPA. And that's what this one was all about. We wanted to create an IPA that fit in the core. So we wanted it to be a version of an IPA that stands the test of time and is not sort of a flash-in-the-pan sub-style. And for me, that really is best embodied by the IPAs of the West Coast, particularly San Diego. So I was fortunate to go down there a few years ago, and of course every brewery has an IPA. But when I think about San Diego IPAs, they're predominantly, you know, kind of orange colored. Yeah. They're fairly boozy. They've got a reasonably sharp bitterness. And they've got a lot of fruit flavors coming from either citrus or tropical fruit notes, but they're brilliantly clear. And they don't really bog you down as you drink them, so that kind of makes them dangerous at the same time.
Yeah.
We've also been fortunate to get to know the guys at Lagunitas, and their IPA is hugely successful. And I think one of the things that's been really great for them is they landed on kind of an area of specs in terms of alcohol and bitterness that gives you the IPA experience you want, but doesn't get you too messed up too fast, mm-hmm. kind of like a palate wrecker from Green Flash might do. We took inspiration from San Diego and from Lagunitas, and we put our own spin on it. This was partially inspired by our small batch SoCal IPA. So we're using Amarillo and Mosaic and Cascade for a bit of punch, and choosing our hopping carefully so that we get this big tropical fruit kind of punch out of it. We describe it as, Mike, you want to take him through the flavor note?
Well, we haven't decided.
I would be taken through the flavor note.
There's one particular note that we haven't exactly pinned down what it is, but amongst that fruit bowl, we're getting some melon, and we haven't decided if we're going to coin the term honey loaf.
Cantadu or honey loaf.
So feel free to hashtag tweet your favorite.
Yeah. And,
honey loaf. Cantadu.
We'll disagree later.
That's awesome. Yeah. I get that though. It is kind of one or the other. It's very fruity, very tropical.
Well, it's interesting because you guys mentioned the Amarillo and the Mosaic, which are two hops. Maybe I'm wrong here, but I think it's more modern hops.
You're not wrong. They are two hops.
when I think of the old, like the Brockton, and I did some really bad home brewing, so get ready. I think of the Sea Hops as sort of that old school, mid 2010s.
Yeah,
that sort of IPA. Whereas the Mosaic and the Amarillo strike me as sort of that newer school.
Yeah,
am I totally off here?
No, you're not wrong. If you want to get deep on the nerdy side of this, the Amarillo is a proprietary brand, so only a few growers in Yakima own the rights to grow Amarillo and Mosaic. but Centennial is a public brand, so anyone can grow it. Centennial is a pain in the butt to grow. It doesn't really like to perform well for the farmer, but Centennial is still beautiful. It's got a lot of floral aroma and flavor that kicks out to me particularly, which is why I've used it in both the pale ale and in the IPA. It really buoys up the more punchy tropical flavors of the Amarillo and the Mosaic.
Mm-hmm.
So Centennial is cool.
Talking Centennial or Cascade?
Well, that's Centennial. I mean, Centennial is in the SoCal IPA that inspired us. Cascade, on the other hand, when you do use it in an IPA, even in a small quantity, does give this like punch and kick of Northwest IPA. You know, it's got like that IPA flavor that I like. You know.
Which is in my roundabout way, what I'm trying to get at poorly, is that I didn't like IPAs in the 2010s.
Yeah.
I was into English pale ales, that maltier, biscuity side of things, and I would drink them from time to time and be like, damn, that's a kick in the mouth. This is not. And it reminds me of because we've been traveling to LA every 6 months or so, it reminds me of, as you were saying, the San Diego IPAs, a little bit of Sculpin.
I love Sculpin.
Yeah. from Ballast Point. And I'm drawing a blank on the others, but that's what I'm getting off this. It's a much more approachable while still having those hop flavors.
We've been serving this to people recently, and they've come back saying, can I have more of the fruity one?
Yeah.
And
I've been impressed with the number of people who say they're not IPA drinkers, and if we're doing a tasting, I'm like, well, try it anyways. Just try it.
And the number
of people who are like, I'm not an IPA drinker, but they actually say they really enjoy this beer is fantastic. Because in my mind, when people say they don't like IPAs, what I hear is I don't like bitter beers.
Yeah.
And as you're saying, with the hops you're using here, we're getting a lot of fruitiness, not a ton of bitterness.
Right.
So it's still very approachable. I feel like talking about IPAs of the 2010s, that's back when brewers were trying to show off how much bitterness they could get out of hops.
Yeah.
And now I feel like brewers are trying to show off how much flavor and fruitiness they can.
Record.
Yeah.
Like, what? Here, let me wreck your face. Also give me money for it. It was a weird time.
But we were trying to make this IPA come into the realm of a fully legitimate craft IPA, just of one that is going to fit perfectly in the core. I mean, obviously, like everybody else, we do a lot of IPAs here in our tap room, and we have a constant rotation of them, and people really like them, and they buy a lot of them. But for a core IPA, I didn't want to do a brute or a hazy or a milkshake or whatever. I wanted an IPA that is a go-to IPA, and this was it. But just with the hops we have available and the new way we're brewing IPAs, they are not as aggressively bitter.
No.
And they're bringing in people from parts of beer drinking that weren't going into IPAs before.
Yeah, no, I actually really do like this one a lot. And there, like you said, there's very little bitterness. It's very fruity. It's an easy drinking summer beer.
Yeah.
It's still, you know, 55, 60 IBUs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But not all IBUs.
Just with the fruitiness of the hops.
Not all IBUs are created equal.
Yeah.
No, and I mean, I think that's like the next great battle. I mean, I'm sure somebody in marketing, it's their big battle. It's not mine. but is re-educating people on the idea that, you know, IPA is not always bitter.
Yeah.
Hoppy is not always bitter.
Actually, that speaks to something. So we elected, like I was saying earlier, in terms of getting consumers the experience that they are signing up for when they're buying our beer, we decided to represent the hoppiness and the maltiness of our beers on the can and on the box as a 5-point pictogram scale instead of as IBUs now.
Mm-hmm.
Because we did find that people were really aware of IBUs because maybe they had tried a beer and had a bad experience. And we wanted people just to be aware of the hoppiness. Instead.
And some people get defensive around IBUs if they've had, you know, some people it's, I don't drink anything under 50 IBUs. Other people it's, I don't drink anything over 50 IBUs. But not all IBUs are created equal. The body of the beer, the hops you're using is really going to affect the perceived bitterness. So just went with a consumer-friendly scale instead.
Right.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
And because, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I'll, tell me if I'm wrong, Kevin. But IBU is a chemical measure.
Yes.
and I mean how you perceive that chemical measure, that amount of alpha acids?
Dissolved iso-alpha acid in solution.
He's pushing his glasses up. His nose.
His imaginary glasses. So,
how you perceive those against the sweetness from the malt, or I mean, even other hops, depending on where you're at them, I would assume, you know, is going to change the way you taste that beer. Mm-hmm. So it's a really shitty measure, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
Get the IBU off the board, it's not worth it.
And, you know, IBUs don't account for dissolved humulinone, which is another bitter compound from hops coming from dry hopping. So, you know. So
there's also that.
Yeah, for sure. I knew that.
Yeah. Neat.
We were all thinking it.
That's awesome, guys. I've really enjoyed these three beers. It's something I've been going through with my friends lately. Is, you know, I think it's always been with craft beer. Everything is a reaction to the reaction, right? And
yeah.
I think over the last several years, you know, we went really hard into those hazy beers, the one-offs, like it's this week only, and you better drink it by tomorrow or it's dead. And I mean, people are reacting again to that. We're seeing sort of this semi-rise of like the session beer again, especially pilsners and lagers. Pilsners are lagers. I mean, yeah.
You're nailing it.
All right, I'll take it. And it's, so we see that, you know, I'm looking to see now the rise of the core and that sessionable core style beer.
Yeah.
And I think you're seeing that all over the place.
Yeah. Well, the way we see it is, you know, when we started out, we were one of very few beer options, and our founders wanted to provide more beer options for people. So we've always been about interesting and approachable beers. And so we just, with our updated lineup, that's still what we're aiming to do. Just updated for modern beer drinkers, but interesting. They've got character. They're fun to drink, and they're approachable.
They're go-tos.
They're go-tos.
And that's why they are the core.
We're a little bit selfish in the brewing of these.
These are the this core lineup is the beers that I wanted to drink.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's why we made them.
Nice.
And I want to drink what you want to drink.
We'll defer to you. So we have this new core. Is anything else changing? I know that a lot of your one-offs come straight from the island. Mm-hmm. They're mostly in the Vancouver market. Is that changing at all?
No, absolutely not. We are doing 4 quarterly seasonals for our small batch releases, but we always have something new down in the tap room, and a lot of our wackiest stuff is down here. So if you're into that, come down and check out what we have going on. There's always new stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Kev's won multiple BC Beer Awards over the last few years from the small batch program. Some of the stuff he produces is only available on site. It'll be a single batch, so when it's gone, it's gone. So if you're in the neighborhood, pop in. We've got a growler fill station. We've got the tap room. You can do flights. We've got a full kitchen.
Mm-hmm. I have full kitchen. And I should say, that's actually one of the things I wanted to mention is that, you know, it doesn't seem like Granville Island has ever lost its soul in that there's always been something coming out of this spot. And I mean, we should say that we're actually sitting in the tasting room and I was going to call it the brewing center, but that's not what it's called.
The brewing center.
It's like, it reminds me, I don't know, I'm looking over there, it's like that. It's like a Power Rangers thing. Anyway,
we call that our fishbowl brewery because it's lined with glass. And people get to drink their beer and watch every single thing that me and the other brewer Mac do in there. So we like to, you know, dance sometimes for people out there.
I would call it the morphing zone, but that's just me.
You're right.
In any case, it's never really lost its soul. There's always been this piece coming out, and it's interesting to see the next evolution. And it's great to see that the next evolution includes the local brewer, like it always has. Will you ever make a hazy beer in 16-ounce cans?
Does it have to be in 16-ounce cans?
12, I deal with it.
12, but you prefer 16-ounce cans?
I prefer 16. That's just my preference. I'm not going to tell them what to do.
Do you feel like the market wants 16-ounce cans? Are my bosses listening? Can I have a canning line?
No, you can put it in there. I'm just joking around. No, these beers are great. I really enjoyed them.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anything else that you guys would like to add?
Thanks for coming down.
Cheers.
No, it's great to talk with you guys. Thanks for sitting down with us.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Thank you guys. This is awesome. It's so good to hear about all the new beers that are coming out. And thanks for killing that.
Thank you.
We hope people enjoy them.
Yeah, I'm going to go enjoy another one of these soon, I think. Cheers. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to Pacific Beer Chat. We can be found on all podcast apps as well as at pacificbeerchat.com. If you find a podcast app we are missing on, let us know and we'll endeavor to fix that. Leave us a review on iTunes as it helps expose more people to the show. You can email us at feedback@pacificbeerchat.com. We can be found on all major social media apps at Pacific Beer Chat. Logo design was by Tim, the craft beer tourist. Audio editing done by Cam, known as Cam on Tap on Twitter. To play us out, here is a clip of the song Lothian by the band Conundrum, performed by Kevin Ems. Find them at conundrum-music.bandcamp.com. The song that plays us out is part of our intro.